The views you are about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests. They are not necessarily views that are shared by the organisations to which Kira is associated.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
So, hi everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. A welcome, Adil, to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod podcast. Welcome.
It's a real pleasure. It's an honour to be here.
Thank you so much for saying yes. It means such a lot to me that you've taken this time to talk to me. So, A, thank you very, very much.
Oh, well, I mean, I had no choice. I mean, you were emailing me, you were finding me on every single social media platform. No, I'm joking. It was, it's not hard to say yes, and then just to make sure we get some time in. It's important. And I quite enjoy doing these things. It's quite good.
Amazing. I'd love you to tell me about A, who you are, be what you do in your career. So over to you.
Yeah, I guess. I have been very lucky, actually. Been working in sort of the television and radio business since about 1994. So, you know, quite some time now. And I was quite young when I first got in. It was whilst I was at university, and I worked at what used to call pirate radio, which is sort of illegal radio then. But it sort of gave me a real place to sort of mess around and be pretty awful and learn the ropes a little bit. And then I made my way through radio, whether it's commercial radio, then eventually at the BBC. And it's when I was at the BBC, I thought, oh, television, that could be fun. And sort of knocked on doors. I mean, gosh, it was hard. You know, you sort of keep on knocking on doors until one door opens, I guess. So, you know, and then I end up in television. I end up sort of presenting initially, and then I end up acting with Citizen Khan and a few other acting jobs, and then a bit more presenting, and then Good Morning Britain and now Lingo. And I feel very lucky. I just feel really fortunate, very lucky. Yes, I've worked hard and I've had amazing people around me that have made things happen. Great team of people everywhere I've gone. I've been very fortunate. But in the world we're in right now, you're just all grateful every day. I've learned that a lot. I think during COVID has taught me that, and now with what's going on around, it's sort of that thing of who am I now? But I'd like to think of a person that yes has been successful, yes has had, you know, some achievements, I guess you can call it. But I think the thing that I'm learning more than anything that I probably haven't learned enough in the past is just to be grateful for having your health, having food on the table, having friends and family and all those things, and perhaps not chase everything too much, you know. So that's me. That was a slightly deep answer for what was quite a straightforward question, but there
no
you go.
Worries, no worries. No, because I did, like, when you first started doing Good Morning Britain, and obviously I was watching Good Morning Britain when you were presenting, and I was like, I recognise him. I'm sure he's done other things as well. So then I looked you up, and I was like, yeah, that's where I've seen him. So then I thought, what was really lovely about you is when you're on Good Morning Britain, you're really relatable, you're really genuine, and you say how it is, but you do it in a really lovely way. And
that's very nice. It's very nice. Well, I think it's important, you know, sort of, I think it's a really strange one. So Good Morning Britain has sort of changed a lot for me, actually, because it's so high profile. I mean, it's, you know, a large audience 5 days a week. I mean, you know, I've done a sitcom which has had large audiences, but you're on once a week for maybe 6 weeks, you know. But this is on every day, pretty much for the whole year. And I don't do every day, but, you know, but it's still just really high profile. And I think there's two things that I sort of tried to do is, A, use the platform wisely, you know, and do use it wisely, and do sort of say to, you know, and stand up for the right issues and take people on and hold people accountable. And standing up for the voice that perhaps doesn't always get heard on sort of mainstream channels and news shows. And I think that's That's been really important. And the other thing I've sort of learned because of the audience and because of how brilliant ITV is and the people around there is sort of, and on one hand doing that, but somehow trying not to be preachy or overly, you know, sort of forceful with an opinion and just sort of make it conversational and try and connect with the people around you and the audience at home. And I think most of the time I get that right. Might not be all the time, but yeah.
I think you do come across as someone who has his heart on his sleeve, and you come across as very genuine. So no, you do.
That's very kind of you. That's very kind of you.
So I guess my next question is, out of all of the things in your career that you've done so far, has there been any highlights, best bits? What's been good?
I mean, I would say still to this day, Citizen Khan for me, you know, was the thing that I loved because it was so hard work. I'd never acted before. So I had, you know, suddenly you're learning lines, learning the trade. And it was a live show in front of a studio audience. So it's, I mean, it's the hardest thing in many ways. And I remember hearing an interview with Dame Judi Dench, and Dame Judi Dench was asked, I think on her Desert Island Disc, she was asked, you know, what is the hardest job that you've done acting wise? You've done it all, you know, filming, films, you know, television, drama, theatre. And she said studio sitcom. She said it's the hardest thing because you have about 3 days to learn a script.
Yeah.
Unlike theatre, where you would get 3 months to learn a script and you'll rehearse it from start to finish. And then you learn this, try and learn this script in 3 days in front of and perform in front of a live studio audience. And then you say, I tell you what, I'm so unrehearsed, but why don't we film it and put it on television?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the most nuts thing when you think like that. Yeah. Anyway, that became my first thing. So it was really hard, but there's something really special about comedy, and especially studio comedy, which is about laughs. It's unashamedly about laughs. It's not trying to be cool.
Yeah.
It's about involving everybody. It's about poking a little bit of fun, yes. But essentially, it's about bringing everyone to the TV channel for 30 minutes and forget about your worries, forget about your concerns. Yeah. Let's just have a laugh. We're all together.
Yeah.
And you know, and we had an audience of families of all ages, of all colours. And, you know, I remember one night there was a whole load of Muslim girls in hijabs, and next to them was a whole load of, you know, blokes from Warrington on a stag do. And, you know, and you just think, well, we're so lucky because there's not many audiences like that in the world. So it felt a real privilege to do, and I do miss it. And who knows, one day we might do something again. But that's probably the thing I'm most pleased with over the years. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And that's, I've seen a few episodes and they were very, very good. So yeah, I was a fan back in the day when it was on. So yeah, please bring it back.
Well, that's so good to hear. Thank you.
Yeah, bring it back. Bring it back.
Yeah, we'll try.
And then I can say I told him to do that.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a bit worried you'd be trying to take a slice of the my fee now. Hang on a minute, that was my idea.
No, I wouldn't take anything from you, don't worry. But no, so basically, thank you. I don't know, what's your opinion of seeing people with learning disabilities on TV, or do you know anyone with a learning disability?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I mean, I've got some family relatives who have, you know, some learning disabilities, and I do know a few people I've worked with on TV sets that I've been made aware of. But actually, it's funny you should say that, actually, because I've been having a conversation with other people in the industry. I sit on the board of the National Film and Television School, and as part of that, I set up a sort of a subcommittee, if you like, off the board to examine diversity and inclusion and all those, you know, things, and how they were addressing it and the challenges they were facing at the National Film and Television School. Now, bear in mind, the NFTS is a fantastic institution. It's, you know, one of the beacons of sort of higher education if you want to go into television and film, and has created many famous directors whose films we love, and actors and animators, and all these people have come through the NFTS. And it's just, you know, it's incredible. And so we worked on this, and for about last year or two, we've largely been working on race, you know, right. clearly because of Black Lives Matter yeah. And George Floyd, and it was clearly an issue. But it's incredible how quickly we've come to, well, you could argue quickly, not quick enough, mm-hmm. but I'm pleased with that. We've actually naturally gone to a point going, oh, hang on a minute. Not that we're saying race diversity is now all sorted.
Yeah.
But we are now starting to think about prioritizing our focus, at least just for our purposes of our group, is disability. And actually a thing that we talk about a lot is learning disabilities and those disabilities that aren't necessarily visible to people, and I think that's so important. And I'm a real champion at the moment of, we've got to be so careful with the diversity debate, because it feels like just by saying the word diversity or inclusion and having a policy, it almost as if that literally ticks a box and says that we've got everything covered.
Yeah.
But there are people that can get missed out, that people can, and we could be being actually counterproductive in what we're trying to do. So, and I think it's important that, we continue to have conversations, and this is great, talking to you.
Yeah.
And I think crucially it's about dialogue. It's about people being free to openly discuss subject matters, even if it means they might say, step on the wrong thing and say something wrong, because it's not, they don't intend to, but if they say something wrong, that's the only way we can correct them, I know in my times when I've been with friends, I can think back over the years when a friend might have said something about being brown or Asian or Pakistani or Muslim, and other people in the room have gasped, and I'm not saying I was not sort of taken aback by it, but my reaction was not to sort of sort of be very aggressive or accusing to that person, was to actually have a conversation with that person and make them realize. So I think that, in a nutshell, I think what we need to be doing is just being able to talk about it more and create that space more. And that's certainly what we're doing at National Film and Television School. And I know lots of other people across the industry are aware of it, but I think what you're doing is fantastic. And it's just, we constantly need those reminders.
Yeah, because I actually used to sit on the ITV Disability Inclusion Group. So I actually used to come to the ITV building. I was on it about 5 or 6 years ago. And actually, your lovely colleague and friend, Ranveer Singh, hosted one of our sessions. So I've met her, and she's very lovely. And so it was people like me, Sherilee Houston, who's in Coronation Street. Samantha Renk, who was the Maltesers advert girl. She's a good friend of mine, and obviously she has a physical disability. So it was a group made up of people with lots of other disabilities. And we used to come to ITV and we used to say, right, ITV, let's work together. Let's try and make ITV be more inclusive. Let's try and make them a bit more accessible. And actually, it was really great because one of your former chief executives, I can't say that word, chief executives, used to have a child with a learning disability. Do you remember Adam?
It's probably a bit before my time,
Okay. So one of your former ITV chief execs, he had a daughter with a learning disability. And that for us was brilliant because I met him at a Channel 4 diversity event. He then invited me to ITV for a meeting. He got me into that group. Then sadly, he left ITV and it all kind of stopped. But I used to be part of that group. But I really think I would love to see much more inclusion of people with a learning disability on big TV shows. Shows like I'm a Celebrity, Strictly, all Anton Deck show. Why can't there be a triple co-presenter with a learning disability? I guess it's their show. But, I think it would be... it'd be so much more inclusive. So that's something that I would love to see. And the only thing is, I don't think TV producers, TV directors I think they want to do it right. They want to include people, but it's just they don't quite know how to. And if we change their mind, they might do that.
Yes. I think that's a good point. I think it'll be fear, and fear for all the right reasons. It's not, you know, I don't think necessarily these things are clear cut. I think people are just a little bit ignorant, unaware, just don't know. And therefore, when you don't know something, you often just sort of turn away from it because you're just worried. And so I think, you know, the way to break that down is, you know, the more conversations we are having about it, and the more that happens, starts to happen more in general society, you know. But it's but it is one of those difficult taboo subjects for a lot of people, isn't it? I mean, if you think about, you know, I've got family members who have got learning disabilities, and it's been difficult for, you know, family members to talk about it. It's really hard to talk about it. So, and that's family members. So it's it can sometimes be, you know, equally hard, if not more hard, or harder in a workplace. So that's the challenge, really. And as hard as it seems, I mean, my thing to you, Kira, what you're doing is incredible. I don't need to tell you this, but for me, when it came to race diversity, I realized that I've got to stick my head above the parapet a little bit. I'm the one. I'm going to be a bit annoying, a bit of a hustler. I'm going to get in people's faces a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because it is up to us when you do represent, or you feel you're from a diverse community, it is up to us to you know, make sure that people are aware about what we're doing. And so when I've been on GMB, I will often make a point of my racial background, because it's important, and it's other people watching it will feel, oh, well done for mentioning Eid, or well done for mentioning, you know, Pakistan or India or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And people at home feel connected by that, and that's good. Yeah. So I think it's really important. But I suspect it might feel, from your point of view, that it's a slightly empty words, and there's not much happening. But I am convinced that just as we've started to see a change in race diversity and more people of colour on screen, that I think it will change, because I think I am noticing people being far more compassionate and understanding, and realizing that we need, what I've always talked about, is diversity of thought on camera and in a production room. You know, you really need that. So I think we're getting there, but we just need to, you know, keep on pushing, I think.
Yeah. I actually had your lovely other colleague, friend, amazing Richard Gaisford.
He's okay. I mean, I wouldn't say he's that lovely. I mean, he's all right.
He's lovely. He's lovely.
Yeah, no, he is. He's so good. He's been doing some brilliant work.
Oh, my God. I'm watching him with absolute admiration. I had him on my podcast last year. He said yes to me, which was amazing. And now I'm watching him, and I admire him with my absolute being.
He has an extraordinary, I mean, so many of these great journalists and reporters and correspondents have it, but, you know, Richard is a real great example of being very calm, you know, and reassuring, but getting that tone and pitch absolute perfect. And, you know, he can turn his hand to so many different sort of stories. And you know, and you've got to think about these reporters that are out there.
Mm.
Ukraine it shouldn't have, really, but it sprung up on us a little bit. It's sort of, we didn't really see it coming, but actually, when you look back and you go, oh my God, this is always going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's quite remarkable that people like Richard Gaisford and, you know, all these just brilliant reporters and correspondents could be 1 minute outside a hospital in the UK talking about COVID.
Yeah.
And then within 24 hours, they're on a flight to Ukraine. I mean, it's quite, we owe them so much, which is great.
Yeah, because when I was interviewing him for my podcast last year, I was asking him about, you know, the good stories he's covered and the not so nice stories he's covered and kind of what he's felt about all of them. And it was really lovely to hear him, you know, talk from his heart about the stories that, you know, were really inspirational against the ones that weren't so nice. And it was really lovely, actually. I'll send you the link to it so you can listen to it.
Yeah, do that.
And, you know, for me, I'm guessing that, you know, I was a bit like, obviously, I would love people like him to actually come and meet people like me who have a learning disability and actually come and interview us about the things in our lives.
Yes.
I would love ITV and shows to come and actually meet me and come and meet my friends and actually learn about our lives. I would really love that. So, yeah, if there's an opportunity for me to come on GMB, I would love to.
I will certainly keep that in mind. And you've got my details now. So keep in touch and, you know, maybe send me a little like few ideas on email or what you think we could do.
Okay.
Because I know you're smart and you've got a TV head on you. So you could think about stuff. And look, as I always say about everything at GMB, so you can imagine people all like that, I always forward stuff on to the team. And I only forward stuff on if I mean it. And I always force stuff onto the team, but ultimately there's a team of editors there and make a decision. But I think we absolutely should be doing something in this space, and it's really important. And hopefully not just one thing that we think we've done it now and move on, but you know, it's the kind of thing that we need to be committed to, that it becomes part of the fabric of Good Morning Britain and ITV.
Definitely. So one last question. Fun question.
Go on.
So during the COVID pandemic, did you learn anything new? Did you take up anything new during the COVID pandemic?
Did I take up anything new? Gardening, I think. Because
I did.
I was going to say cooking and baking, but I was already doing a bit of that. And I just did more of it. I started a bit more of the else, obviously the whole banana bread thing.
Okay.
But actually the thing that I was always thought I'd never do was get a bit green fingered and, you know, and get in the garden. And because we had that extraordinary weather in the first lockdown in March and April.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And I just opened my doors out. I live in a place that's got, you know, that sort of modern thing where you can open your doors out to the garden. And it's only a small little place in Birmingham, but it was just me. And I just absolutely loved sort of, you know, planting something and then coming back, you know, a few days later and watching it starting to, it's changing shape, something's happening, and before you know it, it's budding and flowering. My God, I never thought in a million years I'd be getting excited about stuff like that. But you know, there was something, I mean, first of all, absolute thoughts with all those people that lost their lives, and I lost relatives as well, and people who lost jobs, lost connections, lost relationships, all of those things.
Yeah.
And people are still ill now from it.
Those
are the people we need to think about first and foremost. But if you're going to try to be positive, and you have to be, that's the only way you get through it. I do look back at it now and say it was quite an extraordinary group exercise. It was that thing that it sort of centered us all, go, okay, there's not a lot you can do now. You know, we're all got to do the same thing. Now, don't get me wrong, people who had more money than others were able to have a slightly better, easier life. They got gardens, for example. I remember driving to the cemetery at the time to go pay respects to somebody, and going through an area that was, you know, the big tower blocks. And I'll never forget that day, because I remember thinking, oh my God, all right, I've got a garden.
Mm.
How lucky am I, you know?
Mm.
And I remember thinking, there are people there. I have no idea how many people are living in those flats.
Mm.
You know, so I think the one thing I learned, and the one thing that I think I take from that time is, yes, gardening, but also just, again, what I said at the very beginning of chatting to you, Kira, was, I think, making us more grateful and appreciative of what we have.
Yeah, I totally get that, because when the pandemic first hit, I was actually furloughed from my job for 3.5 months. And of course, I was still being paid my salary, which I was very grateful for, believe me. But it meant I legally couldn't work. I couldn't do my job for 3.5 months. and me being a campaigner for people with a learning disability, I had to stop all of that straight away for 3.5 months. And me, I'm a gobby little what's-it. I say things how it is. I do it in a nice way, but like So imagine me sitting on my sofa, having to watch my husband go to work because he was a key worker, because he works for Royal Mail. So literally, I was sitting on the sofa in my PJs, drowning my sorrows in cups of coffee, going, I can't work today, it's so unfair, while watching him go off to work. But actually, when I was brought back to my work, it made me so grateful to have my job back. It actually gave me that fire to do it even better. And it's made me so grateful that I have a career, that I have a lovely family, that I have nice things around me. I even started up gardening last year. We have a lovely patio balcony outside.
Lovely.
And at the moment, I've got daffodils blooming.
So hey, perfect time for daffodils. Yeah. I love daffodils.
My dad is Welsh, so I did them for him. So St. David's Day, I sent him a photo of me and my daffodils and was like, happy St. David's Day.
They are the most simplest but most beautiful of flowers, aren't they, daffodils? Yeah. They're just lovely.
They're so joyful. Yeah. Like so, yeah, I've taken up gardening in a pandemic. I've done that. I didn't think I would, but I did. But anyway, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It's been lovely to meet you.
Likewise.
Thank you. And let's stay in touch. And
keep in touch. You've got my email address now. Yes. And keep in touch. And yeah, do send me a couple of paragraphs on the kind of things that you think we could be covering at GMB. And like I said, I'll pass them on. But thank you for all you're doing. And, you know, keep fighting the fight and, you know, and shouting as loud as you can about these things, because they're really important. But and I do believe, I am an optimist. I am hopeful. But I do believe that things are going to change and we are going to see better representation of people from all different types of backgrounds. And I think learning disabilities is something that we should really be focusing on over the next year or two.
Definitely. Yeah, I agree.
It was all put together by James Fielder for It's That Friday Thing. And you can hear our show every single week from 3 till 5, only on Surrey Hills Community Radio. So check us out. Tell your friends. We'll see you soon.